Did you feel a shred of doubt as you watched her body drop? As your caterpillar tracks upon her body pressed with 60 tons of deadly force, crushed the bones within her chest. Could you feel the contours of her face as you took her life away? Did you serve your country well on that cool spring day?
You've been listening to The Tree of Life panel recorded right here in Portland, October 17th. 2015, we closed there with David Rovics performing The Death of Rachel Corey from his album Palestine Habibti on KBOO Portland, where the time is 10 a.m. Eric Cascadia is off today, and we will have an extended edition of Flashpoints with a look at the upcoming presidential elections in Haiti and commentary from the Biggs Beat on Star Wars The Racism Awakens. At 11 on the Radio Zine, host Michelle Schroeder Fletcher speaks with Norman Cornett, an educator who developed a new way of teaching, which he calls dialogic. It's the subject of a documentary. At 11:30, Professor Alfred McCoy speaks on Obama's geopolitical strategy for containing China. And thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you are not currently a member of the KBOO Foundation, you can remedy that oversight at kboo.fm. That's the website. Click where it says Donate Today. So stay tuned for Flashpoints right after this.
KBOO Community Radio is preparing for our legendary book and record sale. We're currently accepting your donations of books, comics, LPs, CDs, DVDs. Your discards are another person's treasure, and all sales benefit your community radio station, KBOO. So bring your donations down to the station at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue between 9 a.m. and 6 p.m. weekdays. If you've got a larger donation, call us at 503-231-8032, extension 213, to arrange a time for a volunteer to come pick it up. Questions? 503-231-8032, extension 213, or email volunteer at kboo.org. The last day to donate is Tuesday, November 10th, so don't wait. Bring in those CDs, LPs, books, DVDs right away. And thank you for your support of Community Radio, KBOO, Portland.
Tune in to A Jazz World on Wednesday, October 28th from 2 to 4 p.m. to hear Jessica Lori and her ensemble perform live. We'll be speaking with Jessica about her West Coast tour, where she is these days, and hearing live from the Jessica Lori Ensemble. That's A Jazz World, Wednesday, October the 28th from 2 to 4 p.m. on KBOO Portland. Jessica Lori Ensemble, live.
Flashpoints, politically motivated mass murder in Haiti a week before the presidential election scheduled for this Sunday. Will the elections be fair and free? We'll have a series of reports from the ground in Port-au-Prince from around the country. Also, Mike Biggs puts his telescopic eye on Star Wars 7, The Racism Awakens. I'm Dennis Bernstein, all the street ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. This is your daily investigative news magazine. Well, we devote most of the show today to the presidential elections coming up this Sunday in Haiti. My co-host for the broadcast is Kevin Pina, who will join us in a moment. But first, earlier today, we reached human rights attorney and Haiti activist Nicole Phillips in Port-au-Prince.
So my name is Nicole Phillips. And I'm a staff attorney with the Institute for Justice and Democracy in Haiti and an adjunct professor at the University of California at Hastings. I'm in Port-au-Prince, Haiti, right now. We're here helping participate in an election monitoring delegation with other Haitians that work in our office. And these elections will be taking place on Sunday, October 25th.
All right, let's talk a little bit about what's going on now. This is the first election that Lavalas is participating in. There must be a lot of different things happening on the ground. There was just problems around the constituent election. Set the scene. What's the atmospheric pressure?
Yeah, like you say, there's a lot of different things happening. On the one hand, people are still reeling from the August 9th elections, that was the first round of legislative elections, where there were a lot of irregularities. There was a lot of voter intimidation and violence. Some reports by Haitian civil society groups say that as many as 50% of the voting stations in the country had irregularities and fraud. So this is something that, you know, the Haitian voter, it is preventing a lot of people from wanting to vote and participate in these elections. At the same time, Famille Lavalas is doing a great job at going out into the field and spreading the message of go out and vote, with the belief that if people really go out and vote, that will minimize the impact of the fraud, because the fraud is being perpetrated, according to some investigations by the Electoral Council and other observers, by the current president's political parties that they're aligned with, right? So if the people go out and vote and we can get higher than a 15% voter turnout, which is what we had in August 9th, that the people's voices actually can be heard. But then there's this tension with fear of going out and vote. And the other sort of big elephant in the room is the international community, in particular the U.S. government, based on elections that have happened in 2010 and previously, feeling like regardless of how we vote, the actual results could be manipulated one way or the other by the U.S. government, by the international community. So why bother?
All right. Talk a little bit about what it means to be on the ground. And is Lavalas now being allowed to participate? How will they play a role, given that they have been out of the process for so long? How will that affect the election?
Yeah. Family Lavalas has been allowed to participate in this election. In the last few elections, stemming back to before 2006, they were illegally excluded with, you know, pretextual legal reasons that had no real legal basis at all. So it's very, very exciting that they are being allowed to participate. I think that a big strength that they add right now is there's a group of parties and candidates that are opposition to this current government led by President Michel Martelly. And so they provide a lot of strength in that opposition and have been over the course of the last few years as the Haitian people have asked for elections, because keep in mind, elections should have happened 5 years ago for various seats within the parliament, local elections, mayoral elections, and this government has refused to have elections for years. And so with the crisis that we have now in the country is that almost all of the parliament has turned out, and all the local mayors have turned out. So the only actual elected posts in the country right now are the president and 10 out of 30 senators. So it's a political crisis. And Famille Lavalas has, I think, helped bind the opposition to various different shenanigans being proposed by this president. And I think, President Aristide did come out publicly, spoke for one of the first times since he came back from exile in March of 2011. And he raised the hand of the presidential candidate, Dr. Narcisse, for Famille Lavalas, and it was encouraging people to go out to vote. And this still is by far a leader in the country, and I think it was very powerful for Haitians to see him in public, to be able to hear him speak, and to get the encouragement for democracy.
All right, you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We're speaking with Nicole Phillips. She's a law professor. She's on the ground to keep an eye on elections, presidential elections that are coming up on Sunday. Now, you said earlier, Nicole, that the corruption appeared to be coming from the current president and the parties and the people that represent him. What kind of corruption is there? Also, is there intimidation? How can we understand what might happen in terms of the current president and the fact that the U.S. is behind him?
Some of the intimidation that we saw on August 9th that we are likely to see again this Sunday is in terms of electoral observers. Each voting center is allowed to have 5 electoral observers from different parties. There seems to be quite a lot of strong-arming, and that most of the observers seem to be part of one of the 2 parties associated with the government. Although they were supposed to be selected at random, and although there are dozens and dozens of parties that should have been represented that were not, many times they would say on their ticket that they were from a different party. But when you ask these people what party they were from, they didn't even know. They didn't even know what party they were from. It clearly was that they were placed there through others. That's important because, you know, those observers are what keep the election without fraud, right? So they're the ones that when some type of ballot stuffing or that kind of thing happens, you need these monitors to make sure that to keep it clean. So that was one big thing we saw. We also saw strong arm violence. We saw people coming into the polling station and with weapons, sometimes without weapons. And they're thrashing the polling stations, destroying ballots. I mean, that kind of stuff was quite prevalent. Like I said, 50% of the polling stations had some sort of irregularity happening like that. There was also some issues in the tabulation, pulling the votes together, whose hands they passed through. There's also, you know, a lot of vulnerability to being manipulated at that point after the close of voting. But the people on the streets were hearing that these problems were happening, and so they also stayed away from the polling stations. And so that, of course, interferes with people's right to vote. And so you saw a voter turnout of about 15 to 18% or so.
And what about actual physical intimidation? We know that in former elections, the United Nations, the U.S., really were engaged in all kinds of dirty tricks to undermine, to imprison, to attack, to kill. What do we know about that kind of intimidation at this point? Is there anything being felt on the ground, or are you getting any reports?
Well, there was an attack. There was a massacre last Friday. Dr. Narcisse, the Family Lapalas candidate, had gone to Cité Soleil, which is a Islam, a well-known Islam of Border Prince, to campaign. And she went without security. She was very safe in that neighborhood. It's long been a popular neighborhood for Family Lapalas because President Narcisse. She went there without any problems at all. The very next day, what they call gang, went in and shot people and killed about 12 to 13 people were killed from that.
This happened last Friday. 13 people were killed.
Yes, and one of the problems with this is that the Haitian police, of course, should be investigating it. Should be figuring out who did this, and we should be sending a clear message that violence will not be tolerated in general at all, especially in connection with these elections. And that message is not happening. And so, fortunately, there hasn't been a massacre like this that I know of, you know, prior to the August 9th election. But there were a few murders that occurred around the election, specifically some very targeted assassinations of people working within the election system on all levels.
We're speaking with Nicole Phillips. She's an attorney. She is in Haiti on the ground as to monitor the presidential elections coming up on Sunday. Now, again, I want to just be very clear that you're saying last week, last a week ago, last Friday, there was a massacre. Maybe 12 or 13 people were killed. I'm mentioning this because there was no reporting, very little reporting in the U.S. press. Were these people who were attacked, were they associated with Lavalas?
So there aren't very many details out. Yes, the confirmation is 12 or 13 people. I mean, yes, 12 or 13 people were massacred. It was unclear exactly their affiliation, but the idea is, yes, they were targeted afterwards by gangs in retaliation for their support of the rally.
Wow.
By Von Malevola. There's a great story that Jake Johnson with the Center for Economic Policy Research wrote on this, I believe, yesterday.
And have you spoken to any of the witnesses? Are there witnesses who are describing what happened?
There are, and I have not spoken with them, though.
All right. Well, this is obviously a story. This is a, so let's call this a pre-election massacre. It only happened a little more than a week before presidential election scheduled for Sunday. Where are you going to be, Nicole? How are you going to be monitoring?
So I will be in many, many different polling stations. We will be circulating all throughout Port-au-Prince in case delay itself where the massacre happened. As well as sort of all throughout, we have about 24 or so people that are going to be part of our team monitoring. I really recommend going to our blog for minute-to-minute updated information, which is Haiti Election Blog. Follow us on Twitter at Haiti Election Blog, or you can follow IJDH at IJDH, or you can follow me on Twitter at Buddhist Lawyer. And we're going to be giving updated information. That part of why I'm down here is to communicate it to excellent journalists like you, Dennis, but also to your listeners, who I know many of them really, really care about this issue also. This is a huge